Welcome to In the Deep. I'm your host, Catherine Ingram. The following session was recorded and broadcast from Victoria, Australia on May 11th, 2025. It's called Permission to Rest. Here in Australia, it's Mother's Day Sunday. And of course, it's going to be that in just a few hours for all of you in the US and in Europe. And I've been thinking a lot about this idea of Sunday, the Sabbath. It's always meant the day of rest. That's what it meant when I was growing up. In fact, in Virginia, where I grew up, we had something called Blue Laws. They were, I guess, religiously based from long ago. They were Blue Laws, and it meant that you couldn't sell things on that day. There was no merchandise. You didn't go to stores. Everything was closed. And there was a kind of calm that came over the land. There was not a hustle bustle. There was not much traffic. You might go for a Sunday drive in those days, but that would be about it. There wasn't anything else to do. You couldn't go to entertainment things, or it was a holy day, right? People went to church or whatever their religious affiliation was. And it was a day of peace, actually. I kind of missed that, honestly. It slowly crept along the way, not just in America, but pretty much everywhere almost, that stores began opening up on Sundays and the shopping spree became pretty much nonstop in the life. And there's many things about all the changes that we've lived through that, we lost some things along the way. What I was thinking about this morning is to offer a Sabbath, that we use this time together as our Sunday Sabbath, even though you're not quite in Sunday for some of you, but close enough. And just dedicate a peaceful time, a phase of time in which we are in rest, away from the hustle bustle, away from the strife, away from the divisiveness, away from the conversation, away from the media deluge. And in contact with, right, in refuge with your own deepest self, a little dip into eternity, into beingness, right, into this breath of life that is animating all of us. A little visit, a little holy visit. Because we can be going so fast, and it really is out there going faster than ever. That can't be denied. Things are speeding up in every possible way. And we are not really physically designed to go at that speed. And we have to almost grab ourselves sometimes and stop. Maybe we have to do that more than we get to do. But at least in this time we'll spend together today, we can do that. We can have that. We can have peace. Those Sabbath days were also meant for reflection on these matters, right? Maybe not everybody went along with that program, but that was also part of it. That's why people went to church, and in our circles, often, even in the 70s, actually, can remember that Sunday was still a pretty quiet day. Even if you weren't going to church, there was something about it that you were unplugged in all ways. So we can give ourselves this gift. We've taken this time. And I'd like us to invite anyone who would like to speak from that place. As though you're at the head of the room and your friends have come, and you're offering your version of a whisper of eternity.
Catherine, I also grew up in the 50s and 60s when Sunday was a quiet day. And I remember the only thing that was open were drugstores. Yeah. And you couldn't even shop for groceries. And we weren't even supposed to mow the lawn on Sundays. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just commercial. It was
right.
You're just supposed to rest, maybe do some homework, have a nice meal, hang out. And fortunately, now that I'm not working so much, I have some days like that. And it's quite peaceful. I garden and take a nap and take a walk, and it almost feels like it's Sunday again, you know, in the old days.
I know, me too. I have a lot, because the conditioning was so strong from when we grew up. When it is Sunday, in any context, wherever I am, I have this old vestige feeling of, oh, it's Sunday. It's like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, even I have things to do, such as today.
People advise me when I retired that every day would be Saturday. And, you know, I still notice Sunday. I mean, I know today, you know, this certain day is Sunday. It feels different. And it'll probably forever be that way, even if, you know, the rest of the week goes by and I don't know what day of the week it is. It seems like inevitably, oh, this is Sunday and it has a special feeling. But I couldn't really describe what that feeling is. It's just different.
Yes. So. Yes, I know. Isn't that, it's wonderful, actually, that there is still that kind of response to it, because it is about rest. It is about peace, right? That was part of the whole notion of it. Yeah.
And having a meal was pretty central, at least in my family and in my area, that we would have a meal around 12 o'clock, a large Sunday dinner.
Yes.
And the rest of the day would just kind of dissipate, and maybe we'd have something light later in the day. But having the meal was a big thing too. So
Sunday dinner was and still is a thing. Yeah.
Catherine?
Yes.
Hello. Hi. I really appreciate my Sundays. About a year ago, I decided to always create a peaceful atmosphere on Sunday and never take up anything work-related or chore-related or anything like that. And it helps carry me into the week in a different way.
Yes, my point about Sunday, because obviously we don't need to make this about a day of the week, it's more just that it's been representative for us as cultures as a time to take time out to revisit the deeper stream of being. So obviously that's something that would just be a good idea all the time, anytime, to really make that a priority. What's instead happened in our cultures is it's a 24/7 just like a 1,000-act carnival that's going on all the time. And we're transfixed by it in many cases, many people. And there's really no break. You know, at least in older times, there was a designated day when everything else did stop. The carnival was closed down for a day. Now it is not closed down, really. Yeah, I take your point. Maybe not a lot of people, maybe not everyone's going to a job on those days wherever you live. But in many places, Sunday is almost indistinguishable, sometimes even more crowded. So using this reference is to just point to the importance of giving that space in one's week, whether it's Sunday or Wednesday or Tuesday night or whatever it is, or multiple times in the day where you say, I just need to remember what's important. even just saying that can shock you out of a lot of nonsense, you know. I spoke last night of being in close touch with my brother, who has a terminal illness and is in so much gratitude and so much peace. It's an incredible inspiration, actually, because he's often just, I talk to him multiple times a day, two or three times a day anyway. I'll call him in the morning, and it's the end of his day. And I'll ask him, you know, how was your day? And he'll say, great. He inevitably says, I had a great day. And often it's small things, you know, just he recently got a surgery that removed this gigantic hernia that he had. And now he can bend over and put his socks and shoes on. And that hasn't been the case for almost a year. And for him, just putting on his socks and shoes is, you know, he just is grateful, right? All these small things, small little wins he has in the day that he notices. And he's very content a lot. And he spends a lot of time laying in his bed and looking at the river. And it's just been, for me, it's been such an incredibly huge teaching and a reference point of, you know, how am I spending my attention? How am I spending my day buzzing around or, you know, just all the things we do? So, yeah, I kind of don't want to make this all about the day of Sunday. I'm using it as a jumping off point for how we used to value a phase of rest that used to be loaded in the system. And now it really isn't. Maybe some cultures it still is, and that's nice. It's great, actually, where you just feel the whole thing goes, you know. Well, we can have that, but we have to give it to ourselves and prioritize it. Some people are fortunate enough to set their life up like that, where every day feels like that. That's an incredible privilege. And some people in great privilege in terms of wealth, they never give themselves that. They're just busy collecting and having experiences and collecting objects, you know, in a kind of fugue of more, more, more. And the culture admires that. But do we really? Do we admire it? If there's not much peace?
I'd just like to mention another thing I find really helpful, and that is to just step outside into the garden or onto the balcony.
Yes.
And immediately you're in a different realm, which offers a lot of peace.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, that's right. Important, so important to, if one can, if one has the opportunity to be outside, to be in nature, to just even just looking at a tree or a plant, right? I have this little patio now where I live. I used to have much more yard, but I couldn't take care of a big yard. So I have a little patio now, and I have a bird water bowl. And so I watch the birds come and drink the water and bathe in the water. And when I first put it out, they didn't know it was there for a day or so, and then they discovered it. And now it's like it almost can make me laugh watching like two birds taking a bath in there and just splashing water flying all around. Drops are just flying into the air. And it's amazing how delightful I find this, you know, just the little things. And I spoke last night about the importance of just having your feet on the ground. It's called grounding. It has a name now, but but we also used to know it as walking and stepping on the ground and being barefooted and walking on the beach. And walking in the grass and all those things. I spoke also last night about how I was in a conversation with some people recently, and they were talking about organic food and getting organic food and this and that. And I was reflecting on how in my childhood, we had only organic food. We just called it food, right? It was all organic, but it was known as food in those days. But anyway, these simple things, right? Just things that you intuitively know are healthy. Like you as an animal know when you're walking on the beach and you're breathing fresh air and you're feeling the, especially if you're barefoot, you know, you're feeling the contact in the sand and this full support of your feet or in grass. You can feel it as a creature. You know that this is healthy. Or just taking a brisk walk wherever you are, even if there's not a beach, wherever you are. All of these ways that we have access, you know, to calm, to peace. And we forget sometimes. We get caught up in the hustle bustle and we forget, what are we running to? I heard Eckhart Tolle once say that he was standing on a street corner in New York City. And he was just standing still, but everyone around him was rushing so fast that it was, as he said, almost as if they were running. Like they were, the swirl was so fast, it was almost like people were running all around him. And he said to himself, what are they running to? And the answer came to him, they're running to the future. But of course, it's the future in their head. It's the next thing, the next place, the next object or experience or meeting or whatever it is. And you can spend your whole life running to the future. And there might come a point, it might be on your deathbed, right? It might be a very critical point that you realize all that running, what was that for? Where did it get you, all the running, all the building up of somebody who did all these things? This kind of feeling of pressure that people have to make their mark, when really what will be left is the feeling in people's hearts that they had about you. That's what will be left. And then in time, those people will be passed on. But maybe the feeling they had about you transmitted quietly to all the people who loved those people. But that's pretty much it. I mean, we joked last night, we were talking about, I forgot exactly the conversation, but we were talking about young people not knowing this or that thing. And I said, they don't even know who the Beatles were. It's like people fade fast, even the most famous, the most revered, but the people who have loved you and whose lives you have touched, that's your legacy. And it's probably short-lived. Unless we think of it as a kind of, you know, the billiard ball concept, that whatever the connection was, it goes on into all the people they interact with and then down the generations. So it's good. It's a very good thing to have that be your primary legacy.
So a big part of my practice has become letting go of that cultural message that I have to achieve and or do I have to be doing something, and giving myself permission to just sit with the lilacs for an hour. Mm-hmm. Or you know, to actually do nothing. And I'm still struggling with, you know, how can this be okay? And I was thinking that I was imagining this friend who's going to visit saying, well, what do you like to do? And well, I like to garden and I knit. I like to knit. And I spend a lot of time breathing. Is that, I just want that to be enough.
Is there any, not to get too personal, but is there any kind of financial pressure that you have to address that does not allow you to just kind of kick back and sit with the lilacs and read?
Yeah, I do have to make an income. I have a little bit here and there. I have to make a little bit of income, but I don't have any human dependence. And, you know, I have made those choices. You know, I can look at my choices and say, good job. You know, it's supposed to be pretty easy now.
Yeah.
And still there's that ingrained message that you were talking about coming from the culture.
Yes. Yeah. We have to be careful about taking on the edicts of the culture, because a lot of the stuff about the culture is kind of crazy, you know, it's mad. And so we have to be very careful about how much conditioning we want to carry of the cultures, the various cultures, and be kind of selective about which ones influence us. I feel lucky in that regard, having hung out in a Dharma culture for so many years, where, you know, it's considered a perfectly reasonable way of life to just, you know, stop. but I do know that a lot of people struggle in that regard with how do I make a living if I don't do something. Now, the other piece, and I want to address it, is there is a distinction between wanting to feel like, if you have a creative talent, for instance, having an impulse or an urge to offer that talent or to create in that talent, I think is distinct from the other kind of pressure where you're trying to be somebody and you've got to manifest and you've got to prove yourself and all of that to feel a certain sense of worth. That's a distinction I'd like to make. Like what someone once said to me, you know, if you deny your muse, the muse turns on you. Do you understand what that would refer to? Like if you suppress your own creative impulses, and you just don't do them, there can be a nagging inside of yourself that, you know, you have a gift and you aren't sharing it. That's a different thing. It's a slightly different thing. It's a very different thing than the pressure that the culture is generally moving in of proving yourself, making your worth tied to how much you've done, how much money you've made, how successful are you, and so on.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I was thinking the same thing, that there's a difference between needing to do things and needing to make money and needing to express yourself.
Yes.
You know, artistically or creatively.
Yes.
And that's a different impulse since
It feels different, doesn't it? It feels so different. You're wanting an opportunity to offer something.
Right.
The other one feels like you're in service to building up me.
It can be.
Trying to give it to me.
Yeah, a lot of ego, room for ego, and well, also in creativity, if that's why you're doing that. But I've been encountering this feeling of just missing, even when I'm busy, just doing whatever is needed, I'm missing being in my creative space, mm-hmm. which I'm fortunate to have,
yes.
and to have time to do things there. And in terms of the subject of Sunday and Sabbath, I usually do landscapes, and I live in a beautiful place, and there are lots of lovely scenes to try to capture.
Virginia?
Oh, I live outside Portland on Sauvie Island.
Yes.
Portland, Oregon. But just in the past few days, I feel like what I want to create is a sacred series. I just want to capture, you know, impressions or relatable images, if you will, of various things we do or can be doing that hold a sacredness for us, whether it's meditating or walking, you know, peacefully, or doing yoga. It just feels, I'm feeling the need for just what you were talking about, more peace, more ease, more space, you know, for all of that. And what I do can inspire someone else to feel that same impulse or feeling, that would be great. And there doesn't have to be any other transaction.
That's right. Exactly. Yes. I think a lot of the offering of one's creative talent, it has to come with no strings attached. Because if you're waiting for the praise to come or to be recognized or honored or whatever, that puts a different vibe into the whole thing. And so many great ones of time, they left us their beautiful works of art, even though in their own time they were not recognized, whether it was in their writing or in their painting or whatever it might be. But the muse was there for them and they let it run.
I'm just thinking about how a simpler time, and by, you know, this move up to Massachusetts out of New York City finally, and planting my garden and, you know, just getting back to a simpler way of life and, you know, being self-sufficient, or, you know, being able to make things and do things, in the process of getting back into, you know, building my workshop again so I can make my art again and get back into welding again, maybe get to woodworking or whatever, however it gets expressed. But now I'm getting excited about the seedlings and putting my hands into the dirt and growing things and letting the muse play me as a creator of, you know, bringing life into the world through these little seedlings, through the food, through, you know, just really connecting to the land in a really deep and meaningful way. I've been, you know, connecting to like Native American sweat lodges there, and an incredible community of people who are connecting to that original way that we've lost. And when I hear you talking about these things, Catherine, I just think about, just that we're so in need of getting back to a peaceful, more simpler way of life, and that we just got set on a track that's not sustainable, and we just want to reset and get back to a simpler way. And just being and not having to produce.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just feel so connected with you, and I'm so grateful to have my mom and dad on the call also, and watching the sunset setting over where Lisa and I are right now. And I'm just feeling so the connectedness of everyone on this call and with you, and, you know, our love for you and in you, and as this community of beings, you know, we're just riding these waves together, and we're just really fully in the heart with you, Catherine.
And, you know, that's back at you from me for so many years, Noah. Yeah. And to know in these choices that you may feel you're stepping to a different beat than a lot of other people in terms of how you perceive, how you see, and how you feel things. And okay, that's how it is, right? That's how many of the visionaries of history, you know, felt alone in it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've always talked about that, you know, just like how self-selecting this group is, how not many are called to this whatever this energy, whatever it is that we are, that, you know, that's calling us together right now.
Yes, right. Ramesh Balsekar actually once had this line, if you were to offer someone like sort of spiritual freedom on the one hand, or $1 million on the other, most everybody would take the $1 million, right? It was a good kind of example.
Well, you were talking about the madness of having accumulating all the wealth in the world, but still running around, you know, and not feeling fulfilled by any of it. Just it's all lost. I mean, what's the point of any of that? It's insane.
Yeah. And at some point it might dawn on the person, if they're lucky, that stuff wasn't actually theirs, right? It was borrowed for time. Right. It was just borrowed. But there's a way in which people feel ownership about their things. And you know, of course, if you had your house robbed, it would be fair to try to get your things back or to have, you know, claim the insurance. That's the game we all play. But it's clear that this is all just borrowed, everything. Yeah. The Sufis say, if you can lose it in the shipwreck, it wasn't yours. Like, it's just gone. What you don't lose in the shipwreck, assuming you survived the shipwreck itself, is the beingness, which is your actual treasure, right? And you get to have that till your last breath. And then beyond that, I don't know, have no idea. I don't subscribe to any theories, but I don't say any of them are not true either, so who knows? But at least here in this phase called the life that we're living, that is our treasure. That is our most primary treasure. And that's another thing that I feel in my conversations with my brother. Every day that he's having a great day is so important to me. Because I feel like, okay, he got another great day. I'm just so grateful that he gets another great day. And these days that we take for granted, you know, and many times maybe we sort of squander them in nonsense, you know, just in Sturm und Drang over nothing, or nothing we can do anything about. It's good to really parse that.
I just did a gardening work with a dirt work all day long, and I'm super tired. I dozed off for 15 minutes.
Oh, good. I'm
glad. And it just made me very relaxed, reminding me of the old days that we got together. And I remember that whenever I sit with you in a room, by the end of it, I feel just so refreshed and rested. And so I just got a reminder of that old days that I feel so relaxed and rested. And that's how I feel right now. Thank you.
Lovely, my dear. Yeah. I always felt in you know, when we had living in person satsangs or Dharma dialogues, and someone would drift off, I always felt, oh, good, my job is working. Yeah, I never minded if someone would lie down, unless they were snoring, we would have to get someone to touch.
Right.
But I never minded if someone just fell asleep. And, you know, you and I have talked about this over many years when we've been at our retreats. Jean used to do all of the yoga sessions at our retreats for years. And just how deeply in need of rest, of stopping, so many people are. It's the power of the retreat. Mm-hmm. You don't even realize until you just stop. And you start to feel this kind of swirl that's going on. And then as it calms down, there's just almost a flattening of, you know, exhaustion that's begging to be attended. So, yes, it's a good sign that you felt sleepy. Yeah. So good to see you.
Good to see you. Yeah, this brings back all the feelings.
Do you remember one time at one of the retreats, at the very, very end, we did that circle thing, that an inner circle and outer circle, where we bowed to each person and said three phrases? Do you remember that one time we did it?
Three phrases?
Yeah, I can't remember the exact three phrases, but it was just this honoring that we did at the end of a retreat. Anyway, when yours and my turn came round, it was very, very intense. You had tears streaming down your face, and it was a very intense interaction that I've remembered over the years now and again.
I twirl about it.
Yeah. See, poof, poof. That's how everything is. All of our memories, all of our precious moments, all of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing we tend to clutch to is certain storylines, right? Storylines that were incredibly significant to us. And you might then find the person that you had in the storyline says, I don't remember it. So these are all ways of just living in this life open-handed. You know, Bunjuta used to talk about how Alexander the Great left this world, having conquered the known world at the time, and he asked that he was buried with his empty hands open. Right. Great visual image.
I'm just so pleased to be a part of this. So glad that you're here again. And everyone, I just love this group. It's so nice to be in common with everybody and have the same kinds of feelings about needing peaceful time and quiet time. In January, I just completely lost it from all of the holiday hoopla. You know, I just need space between events to, as a touchstone, to just be alone, be quiet. And there wasn't enough of that. And it finally just built up where, you know, I felt crazy. And I've taken really good care of myself since then. And learn to say no thank you, even if it's something that sounds pretty good. I can feel that I just, you know, my home is my sanctuary. I garden a lot here. I learned to do leather work and make things, and I just give all of those things away. It's just a wonderful thing to do, just a devotional to sit and make leather work and then give people little wallets or key fobs or whatever. It's the best. I can't explain it to anybody. I listened to a talk by Kim Stanley Robinson, a science fiction writer, and he called his writing a devotional, a daily devotional. And I just really feel that way about it. It just keeps me relaxed and calm and peaceful.
Yes, that's
lovely. And the results are given away, so that feels even better.
Wow, what a richness, right?
Feeling pretty rich with that, and also everybody talking about their gardens, you know, and sowing seeds and watching seedlings come up and caring for plants and sharing those with other people as well, you know. But eating that organic food out of the garden, there's nothing like it.
Right, I know. Yep. Sounds like a very, very lucky life.
It's a good life. Yeah, we're privileged to have.
I've often thought about the benefit of wealth, you know, like monetary wealth, is that you can help your loved ones.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't do that, but that seems to me like one of the great benefits of wealth would be that you get to help everybody you love. I mean, obviously,
sure.
It could get unbalanced in ways if people just are expecting that or keep coming at you for more things. But just if one is wise about it, and yeah, and you have this wealth in terms of the talent and the resources to make these beautiful objects to give away. Yeah. But to your point about having space around things, I love that as well. I really love, you know, dipping into the fray and then pulling back into the refuge. And one of my friends has a line, maybe not everyone will relate to it, but some of you will. He says, The only thing better than an invitation is a cancellation.
It's so true. We've had many and really enjoyed them. Yeah. Oh, they're not coming. The house is clean. Everything's great. You know. Amen. Yeah. Well, thank you. And thank everyone for sharing. I love this.
Well, just some thoughts that came into my head. I thought a little while ago, well, $1 million is not really that much money anymore.
I know. When he said this was decades ago. So,
but spiritual freedom has always been priceless.
Yes, that's right.
And yet free. Yeah. I remember my father used to tell me, and I never understood it, but when I was a kid, that the best things in life are free.
I know those kinds of cliches that we've heard all along turn out to be more and more deeply true, right? Like, even though you might know something and agree at a certain point in time, then as time goes on, you feel it in deeper ways, in deeper places in your being. You understand it in a more nuanced way. My Buddhist teachers used to say, in quoting the Buddha, or some version of quoting the Buddha, peace is the highest form of happiness. And when I was young and heard that, I used to think, well, peace is great, but I'm not sure it's the highest form of happiness. But as time has gone on, I see the truth of it. Yes. Without a peaceful feeling in your being, everything else is jarring or just so temporary or tied to all kinds of things out of your control.
My Sufi teacher used to use the word contentment.
Yeah. I love that word. It's almost an old-fashioned word that you don't hear much. It's
very Buddhist, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. It goes against the culture's need for more and more and more, right? The pressure for more. Contentment is a quality that would sort of dissuade you, in fact, from chasing a bunch of objects and experiences. You would have no need, right? No need to do that, or not to do it very much. And so contentment itself is almost a radical stand in opposition to the frenzy that's going on around us.
This is my first time that I've had the pleasure of participating with you. I've listened to, I think, every Dharma talk that you've ever given. They're amazing. So I was very thrilled at this opportunity. But listening to everybody's comments, one of the things, I retired in January. And I realized my whole working life that there was always something that was in the background, that silence, that stillness, that quiet. And I don't know if I'm in my working life, I ever knew I'd find it. And when I first retired, I thought, what have I done? Because it was the only life I ever knew was being busy and raising kids and all of that. But 6 months in, and I'm finding how lovely. Wow. And I'm finding that quiet peace. Wow. And it's really been a pleasure. I feel like I've come home, or I'm coming home. Mm-hmm. I'm still getting there. I'm still finding it, but I'll spend the rest of my life finding it. But it's an amazing path.
I'm so happy to hear that and hear the way you expressed it. I'm sure so many people can relate to that. Sometimes at the beginning of retreats, I'll ask the question, what are we retreating from? If the word retreat indicates you're stepping back from something. And what are we retreating from? And what are we going to? And it's like you're retreating from a certain pace, a certain set of agreements out in the culture, a certain kind of pressure, the work and so on. The building up of the me. But,
yeah.
But what you're going to is home. You're going to home, home base. It's like when, you know, when we're kids and we're playing some kind of game and you're being pursued or whatever, but you can kind of get to safety on your home base, right? And that's considered you're safe there. And that's a lot of what this is in terms of recognizing where's home base, where is the sanctuary where I can just be, and it's simple and it's quiet and I don't have to prove anything and I don't have to have a big story about me and being a slave to the demands of that story that is ever hungry for different things, right?
Yeah. And that's it. It's ever hungry for different things. I read something, and I wish I could be more specific, but the thought that I had was, I'm that shiny thing I've been looking for all my life. I was always right here, yeah. Right? I don't need to go find anything shiny or new, or I've always been waiting. So
beautiful. Yeah. And it's what all the great ones have said all along. Like, we've heard all these things. The kingdom of heaven is within you.
But I never believed it.
Right.
Like, yeah, I've heard it.
Sort of so simple, and they're sort of so, you know, it kind of can just sound like a religious saying in a way. But
yeah,
there's so many of those in all the traditions, in Buddhism, Zen Buddhism. The earth where you stand is the pure lotus land, and this very body, the body of Buddha, right, that according to your own direction of your own attention and consciousness, then the earth where you stand is the pure lotus land. This is the holy land. Not in any kind of aggrandized way that you're creating miracles or anything, just that your consciousness can make a space feel holy. And we all know that. We all know we've been in circumstances where we are overcome with this feeling of sacredness. And it might be in some simple situation. A friend of mine, Irish friend, who years ago was in Bombay, and it was the end of the day, it was dusk, and it was incredibly polluted, like just dark with pollution, smog. And he was looking at how, you know, it was just impoverished and dilapidated and dirty, and he was kind of feeling like he was in a hellscape. But then he saw these kids, little kids, running down the street with a can attached to a string, or else it was a kite. I can't remember which it was, but in any case, just some, you know, little homemade tiny toy that they're having a great time with, and they're squealing with laughter. They're having a ball. And he said, suddenly it just flipped in him. He just flipped into this sympathetic joy in watching these kids. So this kind of brings us, in a way, full circle to the points about how it is your awareness, it is your attention that transforms your experience, wherever it is. It's what you're paying attention to. So we must acknowledge that and be wise about how we're using our attention. What are we doing with our attention? It's limited. Each day it's limited. Each day we have to spend many hours asleep in which we're not actually directing our attention. We're at the whims of our dreams. And the rest of the time, we have this allotted amount of attention, some of which has to be used for just the most practical of things, taking care of our bodies and getting food and all those things that we do. But we also have only a certain amount of attention in the lifetime, in the whole of the life. We only have a certain amount of hours of attention. So it is wise, I think, to be judicious about that and to use your attention for the things that are uplifting and beautiful and peaceful and kind and generous and healthy. This is all basic and we forget. Maybe it's just so obvious that we overlook it, but that's the power of coming together like this and to speak these kinds of things just as the simple reminder. This has been In the Deep. If you'd like to support these podcasts, please visit katherineingram.com, where you can make a donation, tax deductible in the USA, and where you can book a private session or join our mailing list to be informed of upcoming events. We would also appreciate a review on any platform of your choice. Till next time.